Hey everyone, we are live on LinkedIn and YouTube. This is the Language of Behavior podcast. So excited to be with you. My name is Joshua Stamper. I'm with the brilliant co-host, Charlie Peck, who also is the co-author of our book, The Language of Behavior. And we are so happy to be with you today. This is a little bit different. You're getting a sneak peek because typically these episodes don't come out until Tuesday on your podcast platform. So if you are subscribed to the podcast through those outlets, of course, you're still going to get this content on Tuesday. But yeah, we figured we'd try something new on a couple different platforms. So with that, Charlie, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. Thank you. I'm glad that we're doing this live. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. So for those who potentially are tuned in, of course, as we're talking, if you have any questions or want to throw something in the comments, feel free to do so. You know, depending on how this goes, we might just continue to go live with each episode. I think it might be a little bit easier and for folks to be able to chime in, but then also, you know, throw in any additional comments, questions as we're going on. So we would love to hear from you as we continue this. But with that, Charlie, yeah, we've got a couple of things coming up. Obviously, we've talked about going to California. Super excited to kick off the school year for a local BOCES here in Colorado Springs. So I'm excited to go do that. I know you've got a bunch of stuff too on the calendar. So what's going on in your world?
Well, next week I get to go to Nashville for the Innovative School Summit. I cannot wait. Right. I get to do a 3-hour session with school counselors. So I'm just thrilled. And then a breakout session at the end of the week. So I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, you're going to rock it. With the events, of course, we pull questions from those who are in the audience to, you know, bring back to everyone here. So this one actually came from that type of situation. So Charlie, if you're ready, we can just jump right into the question.
Let's do it. Let's do this.
Okay. This is from an administrator, and I might nerd out with this, Charlie, so we'll see. But they asked, what best behavioral supports influence student learning? I know they were also in that conversation interested in kind of the data side of things to kind of prove why this information is so helpful. And I know we dove into that specifically in the book, you know, probably more so in the earlier chapters of Language of Behavior. But, you know, what comes to mind with this question?
Well, you actually inspired me for this one because you did some work with John Hattie. You looked at that information and that data, which is so important for administrators. So I would love to throw it back to you because
yeah, of course.
You're the one who really sparked this and I loved it. So what were you thinking?
Yeah. So having that admin lens, you know, sometimes there were some apprehensive folks when it came to student behavior based on some different experiences that they had prior. So I like to have data present. John Hattie did a beautiful study, and there's plenty of articles out there that you can find. Or, of course, you know, we tried to do a synopsis of the data and the different pieces there as far as what he was looking at. But what he was truly looking at was student learning and what affects that, and then creating a score for that. So anything that was a positive in student learning obviously had a positive number. And then, of course, anything that was negative is a negative number that went with student learning. And of course, you know, what we were looking at was ISS and OSS, in-school suspension and out-of-school suspension, was one of the highest. ADHD was also on that list. Probably you can speak to this, Charlie, more so than me. But there were things that we do have control over. Some things that were on the list were things that were outside of our school environment. But I think it's still good to be mindful of those potential negative aspects and what's causing students to struggle in school. And when we hear those things, as far as ISS and OSS or ADHD, I don't think anyone's surprised by it. But what is surprising is that we just continue these practices moving forward and then expect a different outcome. I try to do that with my own campus, as far as looking at the ISS data and OSS data, bringing it to the table and saying, okay, these are students that are repeatedly in this environment, and these are the average grade, because I didn't want to like call them out specifically, but this is the average grade of this student. And what was not surprising at all was that there was a correlation there, because they're not with the content expert. And as good of the ISS environment can be, still lacking, you know, because that person that's in there, that's hopefully doing a wonderful job with those students. And we had someone that was phenomenal, but they're not licensed in 20 different courses. So it was always at a disadvantage for them because they were constantly having to rely on the teacher to give them the content, give them the learning goals and all that other information that's required. And there was just so much time that was wasted based on some of the logisticals. And it's just hard for that student to keep up. And as we know, the students that are in those environments are the ones that need the teacher the most.
Yeah. And I look at it from the lens of that relationship with the teacher, because so many kids, especially like with ADHD, if we're talking about that specifically, because traditional education is not set up for a kid who has ADHD. Sure. And for many kids, actually, but the kid with ADHD, my goodness, it really is a struggle for them in that environment. So just restrictive. And so I worry about them so much because that relationship with the teacher is vital for their self-esteem and their confidence level. And if they're constantly feeling like they're the kid who's in trouble all the time or the bad kid, quote unquote, they often do see themselves like that because ever since that they were in that classroom, they were the ones who were moving more, depending on the kind of ADHD they have or ADD. More movement, of course, with the hyperactivity, but also like a lack of concentration or like looking like they're staring off to space and not paying attention. So how many times are they hearing from a teacher, pay attention, what are you doing? You know, or stop moving or up here, they're bothering me or they're speaking out of turn. Like there's so many things that we could do in that environment that would keep them out of ISS, that would keep their confidence level high so that they're not missing the content. And they know that they actually do belong in the classroom. So that I look at it like that, Josh.
Yeah. I mean, I have a child here at home that, you know, we've tried multiple environments, school environments because of the traditional model, and he's gotten obviously better, but just hearing all of the different negative things. And I think that was heightened over COVID when we were doing online learning and just actually hearing the conversations and the teacher's redirection constantly to the point where we're like, is this actually beneficial to him or is it turning into something where he hates school and doesn't want to be a part of it? And so, you know, we've tried a lot of different, and, you know, the state of Colorado, thankfully, which is one of the reasons we moved here, has a lot of different models out there, both online and in person, that have been extremely successful for him and just the things that he's struggling with his brain.
And I think a lot of people think that if a kid has ADHD, a diagnosis, oftentimes it comes with anxiety and there might be some underlying trauma there and all of that. Clearly, it's not a teacher's job to worry about that. But oftentimes, a parent might ask for an IEP or a doctor. I keep hearing school counselors tell me that doctors are recommending IEPs. And I'm like, they should not be doing that. We need to educate them as well and parents about how to properly advocate for your kid. It's not to put more pressure on the admin team or the school counselors to get them an IEP or even a 504. 504 could actually work in its place and is less rigorous, right? And there's some basic strategies that could go in there that would not only benefit that kid, but also other students. If we just pretend everybody in the classroom has ADHD, and we use those strategies, so many more students would feel so much better and more connected to their environment. And there would be less behavior. So we could do a whole topic on that one time. But when we go back to that piece about thinking about kids and supporting them in their environment and advocating for them properly, it really is about just giving some basic information so that teachers know how to look at that student differently and be a better informant to communicate to say, oh my gosh, this kid might need an assessment. We might be overlooking some things. I'm noticing these behaviors. I'm noticing that this executive functioning going on here, there's a deficit going on there. And this is what that looks like. A lot of times we use that wording, that language about executive functioning. Well, people don't always know what that is or how that shows up for a kid who has ADHD. And they might look at them like, well, they have a learning impairment or they're just a troublemaker. So we mislabel them and therefore misguide them. So if we could just give them some basic information there and let them know how to communicate that, more importantly, to get them the support they need, our system would just work so much better.
Yeah. And I think going back to what you're talking about with the misperceptions, I think that occurs often where we get different people saying incorrect things, you know, outside entities or inside entities, and especially parents, I think it's overwhelming. And for me, as a parent that's been in plenty of special education meetings for an IEP, you know, an ART is pretty overwhelming as far as you have eight other people around the table with you. And a lot of times there's jargon that is used that most parents don't even understand and know. And so, you know, even the understanding of what special education provides versus, you know, 504 and some of the labeling and things that go on with that too. So I think there's some education that needs to be able to happen where we bring a lot of folks to the table, but also making it a safe space that everyone's able to have their voice and understand that they're trying to do what's best for the student. And that goes to with what we're going to be talking about, you know, here in California with the MTSS process and making sure that we're utilizing that system too, to make sure that we're bringing the right tools for the right child.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's about creating that psychological safety. There's tons of data to show that kids will learn better when they have that security in that classroom. They'll want to stay there. They'll want to be there. They'll want to show up. They won't want to be late. They'll want to be respectful to the teacher. They'll want to wait their turn to talk. I mean, there's just so much evidence to show that. And it's actually very brain-based. I mean, their cortisol levels go down. They increase that, you know, those hormones like the oxytocin. I mean, it's just that connection, that bonding, so many things, which therefore improves that attention, that memory, the learning pieces that are there. So, you know, that trust, that responsiveness from the teacher to the student, the way they respond is just all so important to reduce those behaviors that looks and acts like defiance, but may not be. It might be that insecurity there. I mean, especially when it's coupled with anxiety, when they're in their head so much, worrying, not to mention the sensory overload that they're experiencing when the teacher might be too loud, which is so many kids I work with say that the teacher's loud, or the kids around them are so noisy or distracting them. So then looks like they're not doing their work. It's just so much for them to carry. So it really does go back to, let's give them some basic information and get proactive before we start using ISS as a reactive model.
Love it. All right. So I threw up a comment from Dr. Amy Matthew Perez, and she's amazing. She's also in the special education world. So her comment is, see the able, not the label. Love it so much. So yeah, if you have any other comments and you're tuning in right now, of course, we'd love to hear your perspective on the question for today. I know, Charlie, we could talk about this for a very, very long time, and this will be something that comes up with, you know, additional episodes in the future. But I would love to do my favorite thing with you, which is behind the banter. So if you're ready, I'd love to throw a question at you.
Let's do it.
All right, this is coming from social media, seeing all the wonderful educators out there that are by the pool and at the beach going on family vacation. And I know there's a lot of self-care that is occurring right now as they are preparing. And I know if you go to like Target or Walmart, you're going to fall over because they already have back to school materials ready for you to buy. And it's way too soon. But your go-to self-care move after a long, exhausting day at school, Charlie, what is it that you do to unwind and get yourself prepared for the next day?
Well, I have two things. Number one, my most favorite thing to do that calms me is cuddling up with my kids and watching a show. Or sometimes I need to watch the top 10 thing on YouTube with them because I got to compromise, right? It's hard to get a show that we all like together.
Yes.
That I love. I love it. And then the other thing is mindfulness. And I use that word very cautiously because it gets an eye roll from a lot of educators. But just all the training I keep getting keeps going back to mindfulness practice. All it is just really simple. Just try to be in the moment. And then it actually does center me. I've been practicing a lot more, and it doesn't take a lot just to kind of notice that you need to be in the moment. It's very helpful. What about you?
For sure. Well, I love going outside. I'm a sucker for that. So, you know, if I can go for a long walk, I mean, there's a lot of times where, you know, I'm taking the dog out and just going for a couple miles. And I mean, that's usually when I try to like unravel my brain a little bit. And usually that's when I'm boxing you, Charlie, and word vomiting all these different things that's in my head and getting them out. So yeah, I love nature. I love just being in the mountains, hiking, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of my go-to if I can.
Yep. Love it.
All right. We want to hear from you as far as the comment section. So what is your go-to if you have a self-care move that helps you? Obviously those comments will be seen by other folks and help them if they're going through a difficult time. And that's what we want, is this community to be able to support each other. I'm going to throw some things up on the banner here for you because we want to make sure that you are connecting with Charlie and I. So thrivingeducator.org is Charlie's website. It's phenomenal. It's got a ton of resources for you. Of course, for my website, it's joshchamber.com. And then if you go to the language and behavior section specifically, you can go and see a lot of different things that Charlie and I have to offer. Both on our websites, we have freebies, we have newsletters, we have blogs. In fact, I just posted a blog that I'm going to put in my newsletter in regards to a story that I think I shared on this podcast where I didn't do a very good job. I definitely let my anger get the best of me. But if you're looking for more strategies like what we were talking about today, of course, our websites are there for you. Also, if you have a question for us and you didn't put in the comment today, but you want us to look at it in the future, of course, we've got a quick bit.ly for you, LOB questions. You can submit that. And of course, we'll definitely be talking about that in the future because we want to make sure that we are actively helping in what's happening on the campus and at the district level. So we are looking forward to that. Charlie, is there any last thoughts that you have before we close episode 32?
Yeah, just going back to that question we asked at the beginning, just remember that the brain thrives when it can anticipate outcomes. That prefrontal cortex we have, where we can access all that executive functioning that we need to learn, it works best when there is not a threat and when it's not confusing. So just keep that in mind as we move on.
Yeah, I love that so much and can't wait to continue this conversation moving forward. All right, Shelly, with that, I hope you have a wonderful week and can't wait to see you again next week.
You as well. Bye, everybody.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.